too much of the legalism of my youth, it would purposely curl.
Right before it gets in trouble.
I can't touch it. Can't touch it. Sinful, sinful man that I am.
Renee works like the Holy Spirit, just kind of plants a seed. But you know, I especially have a real bad habit of wanting grace to be proportioned fairly. And that is self-contradictory. My natural instinct is to say I'd do anything to go back and change that, except that the good thing that came from it, I wouldn't trade for. But it's the same thing with God. Okay, yes, you've seen that I do things for good, and you've seen that things work out and all that kind of stuff, but don't think that that means we're done working.
This is the truth. The Bible, we can't trust our emotions. In that confusion, everything's going the other way, but God says this. Well, it's not working out for me that way.
Yeah. This is probably going to go down as the worst analogy I've ever used on the show, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Let me say hey to everybody. Welcome
Hello.
To the Other 167, Garrett, Pastor Ben, Kenny
the Jet.
Kenny the Jet. Where's Kenny the Jet come
Kenny
from?
Kenny Jets, TNT. Kenny played at the Carolina. Kenny's
Oh, yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. I should know that. How's the state fan know that? And I'm
Well, I watch TNT because those guys are hilarious.
Barkley.
Yeah.
And they don't pick each other. No.
Yeah. They are
Barkley's ready to retire, but they have fun at each other, and I love
it. They do. Sometimes
it's like pro basketball. I just like watching the show afterwards.
Sometimes you can't tell if they're serious or if they're picking.
Oh, they play it pretty well.
They do a good job with it.
And Ernie.
Ernie's the man.
Ernie Johnson.
A strong Christian.
Is he?
Oh, really?
Got a great testimony. Really does.
And he's been doing it forever.
Yeah.
He's been
and
in those shows.
Good man. He also does the keeps the level, and then they get to joking around.
Yeah.
Well, who's his?
That's what Kenny does here.
That's right.
What's his? Who's his fashion designer?
I love it.
You like bow ties?
I wish I could hire him.
You like bow ties?
Yeah. I would. I just don't. I have one, but I'm.
I'll buy you one. I'll buy you a nice one.
I wore two. I got married.
Well, yeah, married.
Tux, and then I got went to a senior prom type thing.
Huh.
Well, there's no dancing. We didn't have dancing at my school. That would be sinful.
That's the only two that I've been.
Even though every one of them students, we left and we went to a party and danced, but no, can't do it there because that'd be sinful.
So yeah, we were looking.
I remember those days.
Oh, yeah.
So Gabe's hair is getting a little longer. He's wearing just a longer haircut. I kept seeing him yesterday. We were shooting basketball. He keeps doing that.
Yeah, he got
it. I said, we got to get your hair cut. You can see the rim again. You can shoot better. Well, Reese pointed out to him, and I didn't know this, that Hilltop has a rule that can't come below your eyebrows and can't cover your ears. And I did this. I said,
uh-oh.
I need to get my hair cut then, or I'm not going to
get it. Yeah, Wade Christian was the same way. It couldn't touch the ears, couldn't touch the collar, and couldn't be bushy. Oh, I remember I had a ball game. We had a basketball game, and the principal called me and said, you're going to need to get that hair cut for the ball game tonight if you're going to play.
Does that mean you can't be a Christian with long hair?
That was my legalistic days, brother.
Well, my father was like that too.
Yeah.
Well, see, now to be fair, on my side of it, I'm still trying to enjoy my hair while I can. I'm getting to that point where hey, they ain't going to be able to touch my ears much longer.
I
got to
stay puffy because if I cut it, it's going to be like, God,
my hair, yeah.
That boy's got a 5 head. He ain't got a 4 head.
I'm letting my hair grow long so I can live a life of gratitude.
Right.
Like we talked about. I'm thankful for the hair I got.
Yes, and I'm going to let it grow. Even if it does look woolly bully,
my hair was to my shoulders. But I was a circle boy.
I couldn't get mine to my shoulders if I tried, man. If I did, it would grow to my collar and it would turn up because it ain't allowed to touch it.
It was.
Too much of the legalism of my youth, it would purposely curl.
Yeah. Running away before it gets in trouble.
I can't touch it. Can't touch it. Sinful, sinful man that I am. Wretched man that I am who will save me from this long hair.
I never really understood it, but it's all right.
But, hey, I appreciate it because, hey, I like a good haircut now or a
nice, I do now.
Trim look or a nice sharp look, yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I only go get a haircut when Renee tells me to.
There you go.
But then I wait another month. Then I get it.
Yeah.
So she probably
she
already
puts
knows.
The idea
I'm
going to
go
mind.
Ahead and tell you.
She puts the idea
she puts
in my
it on
mind.
Your calendar.
And then I'll think about it for 2 or 3 weeks, and I'll get one.
Yep.
Yeah. Renee works like the Holy Spirit, just kind of plants a seed. But, you know.
Just
gentle nudging. Right. Right.
Probably. Is Renee all right with Nicole?
Yeah, I think she's doing all right. You know, FaceTime and Skype helps out a whole lot or whatever you got, but they stay in touch, and she's doing pretty well.
Nicole, has she gotten
Miss Sam yet?
A little bit, but at the same time, she's got friends out there, and she starts work next week. It was kind of neat. She sent me a picture Sunday, and she said, watching the live stream, and she said, this is like being at home. You know, I get to see a little bit of home, and it's kind of neat. They do a shot when we do the welcoming, kind of a crowd shot, and she's picking folks out. There's Mom. Yeah, there's Mama. There's Tim. There's.
Well, it seems like you're in it every time. Every time I watched it.
Well, I have to be on the screen.
but the congregation, you're in there every time.
Well, I'm looking for the camera. I got to make sure.
It's always, you're always in the center.
Where's the camera?
For some reason, they always seem to focus
on
me.
I'm always looking, where's the camera?
Well, he did go off screen, but then all of a sudden, I see you dart back in.
Oh, I'm out of the camera shot. They're talking to me in my ear. You're out of the camera. Get back in.
So I didn't realize this till a little while ago. My aunt, my mom's sister, has been watching live stream every Sunday morning for a while now. She said that. So we were talking the other day about something, and she brought up watching a live stream, and she said she can always spot me and pick me out in the crowd and stuff because of the way I walk. I walk just like my dad, and I'm standing just like my dad. And it's made me a little bit more self-conscious on Sunday mornings because I didn't know if she's wondered if I did. If she caught me, you know, doing something embarrassing, she'd call it out. So I'm a little more conscientious of that. But it got me thinking. So she shared a post from Fuquay-Varina Baptist's Facebook page I saw the other day, and I thought, you know, I don't know if we have like out-of-town membership packages or anything, but she's almost like an honorary member of the church now. I think she's watching every Sunday.
I am absolutely amazed, and I thank the Lord for it, that the number of people that watch it, it's just, it blows me away. It's humbled, and I'm thankful that the Lord can use that, but it is, I mean, it'll be, you know, somewhere around 400 views, 400 by the time I get home on a Sunday afternoon and get settled about 5 or 6 o'clock, and I'm sitting there like, who is watching this? But I'm just thankful that, hey, the Lord can use that.
Well, there's a lot of people on page. It should be higher.
During the summer.
The last couple of Sundays, we've had a pretty good physical attendance,
and
too.
You've had
pretty good numbers on
and,
that.
People are out. I hadn't said anything yet, but I'm sitting here wondering, okay, what's the fall going to look like?
Yeah.
When we all get through with our vacations and we're all back in, because it's pretty interesting what the Lord's bringing some neat people here.
Because you had brought up a while back, and I hadn't thought about this, that a lot of times you would see if attendance was down, you would always kind of check the live stream numbers too, and a lot of times those kind of fluctuate a little bit. But
balance out.
The last couple of Sundays, I've gotten here and kind of thought, man, we got a lot of people here. And then I've gone back expecting to see a dip in the live stream numbers, but it doesn't seem to be.
Right now, a lot of our normal folks are out on vacation.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of folks that if you watch, every Sunday I'm looking around like, I don't know their names, and I wish I did, because they're new. And I'll hopefully get to know them, but God's bringing some neat people in and a lot more people.
On the live stream, there might be two for every, you know, you get one hit, but there might be two.
Yeah, there might be two people watching. That's true.
Yeah, true.
That's how I know you were camera shots. You are the whole time. So if you want to be on there, if you want your mother to see you, just follow him. Wherever he goes, just be about a foot behind him. Because he stays in that
chair. Oh, man.
Oh, man. I was thinking about this. I don't know if I was going to bring this up or not. I don't want to make it a show topic, really, to get into. But I was wondering, two Sundays ago, it seemed like there were a lot more people than I was expecting, I guess. And I started thinking about it a little bit later on, and I thought, I wonder if it has anything to do with what had happened the day before with the shooting. I could see that maybe being a driver for it.
I know oftentimes tragic events can cause folks to want to head back into church real quick.
Yeah.
For a little while.
Yeah. For a little while, yeah.
It happened 9/11.
9/11 was a prime example, but then there's other times you can see some things. So I think it has to be a major, major event to really, like, and it's packed.
Yeah. Well, I had something I was going to get into a little bit here from the, and you were talking about it with the legalism and the haircuts and stuff, and I've been thinking a lot about, I'm reading the Old Testament and really enjoying the Old Testament. I'm in about halfway through Joshua or a little bit past that. It's really interesting to me that you said before there's the story never, God never changes. Mm-hmm. That same mercy and grace that we talk so much about in the New Testament, they're in the Old Testament too. And that is, I mean, exactly what I'm seeing in it so much, except for the last part of Deuteronomy 28. Boy, that one's brutal. He gets pretty harsh on you there.
Basically, and I love that section of scripture, is basically when you read about the exile and mm-hmm. all the horrors that went through when Babylon came in and all that they did to the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a carrying out of Deuteronomy 28.
Yeah.
And Deuteronomy 28 says, hey, if you'll follow me, serve no other gods but me, if you'll give your whole heart to me, I'll bless you. Man, you won't even know how to turn around, I'll bless you right. so much. But if you don't, and you right. chase after other gods, and you worship false gods, you begin to just disobey me and you forget me, then here's what's going to happen. And it's going to be, I mean, there are some things he tells them that, oof, it's rough when you start talking about whether it's exile, whether it's death or a horrific death. I mean, God was serious about his people being holy.
Yeah.
And that's, he put before them. And Moses even comes back a little bit later and says, I set before you today life or death.
Yeah.
Choose life.
Yeah. And I think that something that, I don't know if it's probably just a personal thing with me that, having read through the entire New Testament first, when I'm reading the Old Testament, I'm looking for the heart of God, even in the latter parts of Deuteronomy 28, yeah. even, and saying, okay, well, there is a part of that where, yeah, he may absolutely, if you're somebody who's looking to oppose Christianity and talk about the mean, wrathful God that people want to talk about, that's probably a pretty good passage for you to try to turn to. But there's the part of it where, okay, a lot of that we bring on ourselves. Like we've talked about before, our bad decisions are going to bring a lot of consequences. And honestly, even if, and there are times that I definitely think he drops that finger of God down there and he intervenes and to create problems for us for disobeying and punishing and things like that. But even in those cases, he's still using it to grow us and to through discipline, through I mean, it's he always leaves the door open for once you return.
Yeah,
he was even forgiving then. I think that's it's the end of Deuteronomy where he basically tells Moses, "This is what's
going
to happen. They're going to walk away, and they're going to suffer, and it's going to be ugly. And then they're going to come back, and I'll accept them back.
And I'll forgive."
And it's so even in the Old Testament, I think that's something that is kind of, I don't know if frustrated is the right word, but there are so many people that, like I've had for a long time, had that kind of Old Testament view of God, of his wrath.
Non-mercy.
Even then, it was almost, his wrath is like a last resort for him if he has to use it kind of thing. He doesn't want to.
I think a lot of people that talk about God's wrath in the Old Testament, but they pick and choose.
Yeah.
You got to, if you want to know what God is really like, take the whole Bible.
Take the whole Bible,
just say
right.
that why did God kill people? Well, truth is, they killed themselves, but you got to take the whole picture and not just part of it. And I think that a lot of people get try and pick and choose, not because they want to believe, because they don't want to believe.
Yeah.
I believe a lot of people make excuses, and that's one excuse. Well, why would I want to serve a God that ends up killing people?
Yeah. I remember telling my kids a couple of times when they were, I would know they were going to do something stupid. And I would tell them, if you do this, this is what I'm going to do back.
Yeah.
And I would almost pray, God, please don't let them do it. Because I don't want to do what I just said I'm going to do. But I threw Reese's iPod out one time. She had a little iPod and she was fighting me about something. And I said, if you don't turn that down, I'm going to throw it out the window.
Right.
And as soon as I said it, I thought, please don't do it.
Yeah.
And she did it. And I thought, man.
All right.
Now I got in trouble for that too. Heather didn't appreciate me throwing that thing out. I went back and got it. It was I made sure I did it at a place that I could go back and get it.
Just set it down.
but there are, I mean, there's some times that he's got to get your attention so that you'll and sometimes people in the Old Testament don't repent and turn back from that, but then some other people see what happened and they do. They might not have got the focus person's attention, but 10 other people saw what happened. And there were so many times in the Old Testament where kings are coming to Joshua or Moses, Joshua, I think, especially, and basically surrendering because they've heard of what we've. Yeah. Well, hey, we want to be friends with y'all because I've heard bad things.
Well, I mean, it was fearful. I mean, yeah. There's a God in the camp. The Philistines would scream that, and it would they would check up real quick that okay, I don't want any of that.
Yeah,
I think it's also one that as you look at the development as the children of Israel continue in the land and everything else. And one gets wiped out, the northern kingdom, the southern kingdom goes into exile. I mean, God was warning them left and right through the prophets.
Yeah.
It was never just all of a sudden a wham.
Yeah. You know,
it was always warning them and always calling them back. It's just whether they would heed it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the, and so there are times when I wonder, okay, we're the same way in America. I believe there are some times that he's warned us or called us back and, okay, are we turning? Or are we just going to continue to go towards the path of, all right, you continue to ignore him. Again, I know we're not Israel. People make that argument. Well, you can't claim the same promises for America that were for Israel. I get that.
Oh, yeah,
At the same time, though, God ain't changed. And so I do believe that he honors a nation that serves him. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. I believe that 2 Chronicles 7:14, although that promise was Solomon talking to the people at the temple. No, I believe for a nation that's willing to repent and turn, I know my God is merciful and listens.
Yeah.
And so I believe there is some merit to that.
But on the singular level, so I mean, at the national level, no, we're not Israel.
No.
But when I'm reading all the promises that he made to Israel, in my mind, probably, I'm not saying that this is right. I'm asking y'all's opinion on, I guess, this. But I'm taking that and saying that those same, maybe not the specific promises of a specific territory of land or a specific covenant, but in the same, the blessings and the fruitful life and the all of the the fruits of the Spirit, if you wanted to word it that way, but all of the blessed life and the blessings that he gives you, that to me seems like at the individual level, whoever's following him, as much as it's speaking to a particular nation, and certainly a nation full of people that are following God, I think you're going to see those nations prosper and be blessed, and vice versa.
No, I think you're exactly right. I think those promises that are macro, if you will, can carry down for the most part to the micro.
Yeah.
Malachi, he makes a promise and he says, test me in this and see if I won't throw open the windows of God and bless you from heaven. And what is it that he says? Test me. It's the only time he says, test me. It's in your giving. Mm-hmm. And so I do believe there are some principles that are the very macro that if he was talking to the nation, that do come down to the individual.
Yeah.
And then there's some, the one where we said, blessed is the nation whose God is Lord. Well, that's Psalms and Proverbs. If there's ever been a micro book, that's gets down to, but at the same time, he still uses congregation and it's plural throughout Psalms and the Proverbs. But yeah, that applies to each and every person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always pretty much taken the Bible as you say, micro.
Yeah. It's a micro macro.
I've never really thought about that.
Right, it's a macro story if you stop and think about it. It's God redeeming the entire world. It's God redeeming the entire world through Israel. It's God's world. It's God redeeming the world through Israel where he sent Jesus. All right, now you start getting down to one man and now how that one man impacts the nations, and then the nations are made up of tribes and every tongue and every, to where it does get down to the micro.
Yeah, but Israel was a macro for the most part, but Jesus brought into more of a micro.
Right. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it is a, that's why I tend to, more agree with you. Yes. But I'll tell you, it's a macro, micro.
Macro.
Big macro. Story, but the big story, but it always comes down to the individual.
Yeah.
I think the Old Testament too, again, from, I'm not tremendously very far into it, I don't suppose, but it seems to be a little bit more of an emphasis on trying to make things fair, maybe to an extent. You know, sin has a consequence, and once you atone for your sin, now you're not forgiven, but you're there's like a balancing almost going on. Or every bad thing has a consequence, good things have rewards, to the point that I think, as you said before, it's kind of painting the picture that we can't fulfill that perfectly.
Right.
But I was thinking about
what I was doing.
How much, and this kind of goes from back to a conversation with Gabe a while back where he said, you know, life's not, or that's not fair. And, you know, the parental natural answer is life's not fair, get over it kind of thing.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I think that we shouldn't want life to be fair. I think that's, life not being fair is one of God's best blessings, because if you want fair at the salvation level, we understand that's a simple one. Yeah, none of us want fair when it comes to, you know, consequences of our sins.
Yeah.
But I'll take it a step further than that. I mean, let's talk about another popular thing that people want in life besides going to heaven. They want money. You don't want fair when it comes to money either. I looked this up for fun. If you take all the income in the world and divide it up by the people, or all the wealth in the world and divide it up by the people, it comes out to something like around $15,000 per person is what you would have wealth-wise. And it might be
fair.
Yeah, if you want fair, if everybody's going to get fair, you get about $15,000, and I think income's about $20,000.
Wow.
Okay? So if you fall above that line, and you're complaining about life not being fair, you want to trade? Okay. And I could even take it another direction, one that I'm very guilty of. You want to complain about everybody around you having all these bad, these opinions that are wrong. You don't want to have to see all these bad opinions. Move to China, nobody will have an opinion.
You don't get one.
Right?
Yes,
so
right.
Back to what you were saying several shows ago and sermons ago.
North Korea, that'd be a good
there you go. We don't want fair. We are in a place where fair would not be a benefit to us.
No, I want mercy and grace.
Right. This is the real point that I'm getting at. Christians have a real bad, or I especially have a real bad habit of wanting grace to be proportioned fairly. And that is self-contradictory in its state, right?
Exactly.
You cannot
have grace.
Right.
Yeah, there's nothing fair about grace, because it's Christ that did it everything.
Yeah,
and he paid our price, and he did all that he did for us. Yeah, there's no fairness there, man. You don't want fairness,
right?
Yeah,
but grace, when everybody practices grace and just gives what they can give. I mean, again, from the money standpoint, the people who have all the excess can share with those who are in need. And there's some of that in, I think it's in Deuteronomy,
right,
where he's talking about forgiving debts at the Jubilees and all that. There's a lot of...
Yeah, there's a lot. When you look at the law, it's not just what you do, or you got to eat certain things, got to get your head, you know, can't do this, can't do that. As you get further and further into the law, you're going to see that God's intent, too, was how we honor and treat others, because that's a big piece of it. It really is. And I think that's why, you know, again, we always come back to this, but why Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, and soul, love your neighbor as yourself. And that's a big part of it, is honoring others, taking care of others. When you see someone in need, help them out. When you know, doing those kind of things. So I think that's one of the things, too, to keep in mind as you read the Old Testament law. You might read a law that says, okay, if you have a roof that is over a certain height, you got to have a gate around the outside. Well, okay, how does that apply to me? Well, I think it's one of knowing that, okay, that is to keep people from falling off. It's thinking about, okay, how do we look after other people and make sure that, you know, we don't injure, or we don't take advantage of, or better yet, we honor others. So that all those laws that seem to be, that's the craziest thing in the world. It there's a purpose behind them. We may laugh at them today and think, okay, so I don't want a bowl of goat and its mother's milk, and what in the world is that about? But it does. It helps us to see the holiness of God, our sinfulness, and that, yeah, if you want to go by fair, you don't want to do that. We need grace. We need mercy. Or more importantly, we need a Savior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if you took spirituality out of it and you just read the law and read the instructions that he gave, the function of it, it would create a more efficient society. I mean, economics, I'm a free market person and believe that if you leave everybody to make their own decisions,
let you do yourself. You need to
know better.
The government tell you what about.
Right. But I think it's the same way. I think it's not to compare the two, but it's just I think that operating in grace does yield a more fruitful and successful society, or a happier society, more efficient society, whatever you want to work. Because otherwise, when I'm hoarding money, or I'm hoarding grace, or I'm hoarding love, or I'm hoarding any of these things and I'm not sharing them, then there's going to be a shortage elsewhere. And when people work to under that law of grace, it just allows, I'm thinking that first couple of chapters of Acts, when everybody's just loving each other and sharing and getting along, and everything's, you know, they're the way you see in a good church now, people just getting along. It just Yeah. Everything runs smoother.
But here's where sometimes that gets a little difficult is you're hoping the world acts like that.
Right.
And that's where it's hard for the church to even act like that, much less the world. And when the world, because I'm sitting there thinking about, well, in a society where you have laissez-faire, hands-off, it should take care of itself. Mm-hmm. But there's, unfortunately,
yep.
You got sinners involved, right. And then it becomes greed, and I'm not going to share, I'm going to look after mine, and I don't have to pay my workers as much as I want to. Mm-hmm. I need to cut it back because I'm going to make profit.
Yep.
And then it creates that whole, suspect of each other and everything else. So, you would hope it would work its way out and do that. And that's where grace comes in for the church is, it's hard to honor others above yourself.
Yeah.
But through the Spirit, it allows it to happen.
Yeah, it's hard to. I think we're selfish people,
which most of us are.
Yeah.
Probably. What was that percentage you got? 99.9% 90% 90% of what my sins are my fault. 90% of people, it's hard. We're selfish.
I'm this close, and I'm not positive I'm not going to do it. I'm this close to making T-shirts that's going to stay on. It says 90% of my sins are my fault, and I'm going to sell those for about $5 a piece on Sunday morning.
I was riding out to Tennessee, what? And I was listening to our shows, and I laughed at that. I got so tickled. Yeah, that one was great.
That was awesome. Yeah, that was one of those
have
times.
Any other entertainment?
And that's the best entertainment I could come up with, man.
Well, I'm sure Renee wasn't all that thrilled.
I was by myself. Yeah, she rode with Nicole out there. I drove the moving truck. Yeah, so I had 8 hours by myself, and I was like, I'm going to listen to us.
That was one of those, that part of that show was one of those times that you might not have seen it or noticed it in what actually came out because I might have clipped it down a little bit. But in live time, there was a small pause where I heard it, and I just kind of looked to see, is Ben going to take this one, or am I going to take this one? I just waited to see.
That low, huh?
Yeah. But no, I think the point with the – I mean, America and the world is never going to adopt 100% grace.
Anytime you got lost people, that's not – the lost people kind of still want that concept of fair.
Right.
Yeah.
Lost people want to be what's in it for me. Right. And again, I hate to say lost people – because it's also, people that are born again, too.
Yeah.
That we are hardwired for that. Look after myself. I got to take care of number one, self-centeredness.
Yeah.
That in the long run, it kills us or it injures us or it brings wrath and sorrow.
Yeah. And I think that the real reason for bringing that up is not just to complain about the way the world is. The world is the way it is, and that we can't change it. But when you're reading all these rules and you're seeing all this, sometimes it's real easy to slip into thinking, well, God's awful petty, and why is he telling us to do it? No, he's just giving us the playbook for how to do how we're supposed to do it.
That's
and
exactly
if we don't do it, there's consequences. And that's not just because God's mean, it's because he told us how to do it right. If I tell Gabe how to shoot a basketball and he does it the wrong way and he misses, it ain't my fault he didn't listen the way I told him to do it. I told him to keep, it's and we don't follow that sometimes, and then when it don't work out, we don't want to blame ourselves. So we got to figure out some way to say that it's God's fault somehow, or he's not real or whatever. We make excuses.
I think that started with Adam. Adam. Didn't that start with Adam?
It did.
Blame someone else.
Shortly after we ate that fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It came in real quick.
We haven't forgotten it happened.
No.
I mean, I see
Adam's, it well.
I see Adam's point of blaming the woman. I guess. I've tried that too. It hasn't worked out for me either.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say anything. Renee watches this.
Sunday was really cool. I enjoyed it. So Zacchaeus is one of your, you said one of your childhood favorites.
I remember one of my sweetest childhood memories was singing that song.
Yeah.
Zacchaeus was a wee little man.
That's what was stuck in my head all week after y'all knew.
With my grandfathers.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And, just Zacchaeus. Sitting in their lap and singing that little song and adding little things to it to make it funny and just joking. And so it's always been, and it's one of those that, honestly, Luke 19:10 is probably one of my favorite verses in the Bible when you think about what Jesus came to do.
Yeah, and it was that's one of my first I remember hearing the kids come home from week here singing that song a lot, so I've heard that one a bunch of times, the wee little man. And I think after you told me what you were the sermon was on Sunday, and I was thinking about it, that song was kind of in my head for a couple of days there. But so you mentioned 19:10. Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost.
Right.
Okay, that's the verse we're talking about. So I was thinking about this Sunday morning. That's kind of our job description as well as Christians. If we're trying to, if we're, our goal is to be like Christ, then whatever he says his, I think you called it his job description.
No, I said his ministry, his job description, his mission.
There you go.
It was his MO. It was his, that's his goal. That was his purpose. Whatever word you want to use, that was why he came.
And that, but the hole in my way of putting that down is that we can't include the saved part. We can seek, and we should be seeking the lost.
Right.
And I'd also kind of jot it down that it has to be all three. It can't just seek that. He can't just seek the lost if he can't save them. Mm-hmm. He can't save the lost if he doesn't seek them.
Right.
And he can't seek and save the ones that aren't lost, I suppose. So it takes all three of that verse for it. You can't skip one. Mm-hmm. But we can't include the saved part. We can't
that part. No, but our job is to make sure that we are presenting how to be saved. We'll let the Holy Spirit take care of that side. But we have to be obedient to our responsibility.
And you gave a bunch of examples of that, because I said basically in our own mission statement, we just have to replace the "and save" with how we're supposed to be living our lives.
And pointing others to Christ.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing. We're like a great big flashing neon arrow sign saying, look at what Christ did.
Yeah.
Here's what he did in my life. He came to seek and to save, and you're the lost, and you're lost. So here's your salvation is here. And so ours is to be that great big, huge, this is where it's found.
Yeah.
You went down to Castle this past week, and the young boys that went, they brought a certain, they didn't pack much of a suitcase, but what they did pack was their, fishing rods?
Fishing rods, yeah.
And that gave you just an opportunity there to be able to bond with those guys, to spend time with. Well, I think one of the things that we as the church, if Jesus' mission is to come to seek and to save that which was lost, we got to figure out ways to build that bridge, whether it's fishing, whether it's ball, whether it's whatever that the lost has interest in. We got to be, I think that's one of the things that as born-again Christians is, how do we make that bridge from talking to this person, whether it's a neighbor, to, hey, this is what Christ has done in my life. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, is the whole seeking to save for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the same thing. I mean, you're saying what missionaries say, a lot of missionaries, to win them, you become them.
Yeah. That's it.
Find something coming. Now, I'm not talking about participating in their sinful natures or anything, but dress like them, act like them, know their customs.
Be around them.
Know their language is a big thing.
Well, it's one of those things that, look, the best thing about a shepherd smells like a sheep. That's the whole thing is, the sheep they hear his voice, yes, but they also know, because he smells like them. Mm-hmm. A good shepherd's going to be down in the out in the field with this sheep. And I think that's one of those things that, we need to make sure that we have those contacts with those that are lost and look for ways that, hey, this is a great way that if he brings it up, man, that's neat. Whatever the case may be, but building that bridge to get to the gospel.
I think there are more people that come to Christ because of that instead of hearing a sermon or...
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not criticizing you, but I do remember
doing... Truth.
I mean, I'm not even talking about you. I'm talking about myself. Yeah. I remember doing street meetings, getting up there talking. I think we were at a restaurant, by a restaurant, and playing music and everything. I don't think we won anybody.
What street meetings? What is that? That sounds like a Pentecostal term I'm not familiar with.
Well, you have church on the street.
Okay, gotcha.
A parking lot.
Okay, gotcha.
And it's not, you have music and you have somebody gives a... I thought you would know what I was talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
I've seen street preachers with a megaphone hollering out to the crowd. I didn't think it was that.
Probably this was big in the 60s and 70s.
70s.
Mm-hmm. But I don't remember any results in that. But I have seen, in my case, that I came to Christ because somebody spent some time. Mm-hmm. Somebody was interested in me.
That's it.
And I've seen a lot of people. And when I went to Caswell, that's what I wanted to do, was spend time with them, know what their interests were. And then it just happened to be what they were interested in, I knew a lot about. Because it may be, because I wouldn't say, God prepared me for... Well, he's prepared me for a lot of things, but one of the things he prepared me for was to be there at that camp. All these years I've been doing, you know, fishing and everything. That was he was preparing me for that. Now, that's not the only thing he's prepared me for, right. But that was
still,
one of them.
That's one. Yeah. That's right.
And so I was able to give him a little examples of. This wasn't official. I did tell this. Now, I think this might be something that I'll share. This is a fly.
Okay.
And I think it's been 20, 30 years ago, maybe. I don't know how long it's been. A friend of mine was a pilot, and he had rented this plane out. And there's an airport right beside where I grew up. It's just a little like a...
Just a landing strip.
Landing strip, yeah, basically. And he took me up in it, and it was a two-seater, and it was like, I don't even know if we can get off the ground. But we flew around the lighthouse. We actually flew over the lighthouse. Yeah, and the lighthouse is probably about, I guess, 200 feet plus. But, I mean, we were up there. Then he gives me the controls and says, okay, I was happy to do it, and I'm just doing this, yeah, flying. I think I'm going straight. I know I'm going straight. And he says, why are you going down? I said, I'm not going down. He said, look at your instrument.
Yeah.
And I looked at it. I thought I was going right here. But I was going like that. And if I didn't pull up in time enough, I would have, you know, crashed and probably get killed. It's just the same way with God. We can't... The Bible, we can't trust our emotions. Because I know in that confusion, everything's going the other way, but God says this. Well, it's not working out for me that way.
Yeah.
But, you know, but this is the truth. What we're going through, you know, whatever we're going through in our life, you know, divorce or whatever, you know, that's not reality. If we can understand what real reality is, the Word of God, because that's what will be proven in the end. And I tried to give them the example that no matter what you're going through, that's your answer, always. Even if it doesn't even look like it, it's still your answer. And I found that to be true in my life. You know, my prayer is actually, you know, we want to be happy, 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 not go through anything. But we should just, you know, my prayer is for us to be reasonably happy and supremely happy in the afterlife. Because God said we're going to go through things. You know, everybody goes through something. So if we could just get over of trying to be happy all the time, I think we would do a lot better serving the Lord, I think.
I think the key word there is contentment.
Yeah.
When you can learn to be content. I mean, happy is an emotion that comes and goes.
Right,
man, it's 95 degrees today. Ugh, I might not be as happy if it was 85 degrees. That can come and go. But can I be content to say, Lord, regardless of the temperature, I can trust that I know who you are. I can trust that you've got everything under control. And I can trust that no matter if I lack something or if I have plenty, I know you're going to meet all my needs. You're going to take care of me in that.
And I apologize. My vocabulary is not as rich as his. I use the word happy. He, you know, he brought it into more.
Well, you know, but I'm just going spiritual on you.
Yeah.
In other words, he's saying it the right way.
You're right. I'm just saying. I know what you're saying.
I ran into that a lot when we first started the show.
You want contentment.
But
because happy goes. Happy's
an emotion. Yeah. Because there's some situations, I mean, you're gonna be in situations you're not gonna be happy. God doesn't expect you to be happy.
But I can have joy and I can have contentment and I can have peace. There's a big difference between happiness and joy.
Oh yeah, actually happiness is not really it's an event, I guess.
Yeah. Well and scripture in Proverbs and some of the others says happy is the man, blessed is the man.
I think it says blessed. Yeah.
But you translate in Hebrew to happy. So there is some happiness there. And I do believe that, you know, you read verses about laughter is, you know, like a medicine. I do believe God does intend for us to walk around with a sullen face and sad all the time. At the same time. But at the same time, understanding that life hurts and life is difficult. And when life hurts and life kicks you in the knee, then okay, I might not have a, it didn't just, okay, put on a grin and bear it.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. We're going to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He doesn't always say just put a smile on, but he does say be thankful and be and keep your eyes focused on where you need to keep it. Because I think you're right. Through the valley of shadow of death, it might be darkest pitch.
Yeah.
You got to know where to look.
I love your analogy in that story because, and I'm guessing that y'all may know this, and there are probably a lot of listeners that know this, but I bet that I know the instrument that you're talking about there on an airplane because I watched some YouTube videos and stuff on airplanes and aviation stuff. Sure. There's the little...
The altimeter.
Yeah. So there's
the right word?
It tells you your altitude.
Yeah,
tells you your altitude. But then there's a,
but then there's one about your level too.
There's a ball that's in there that rotates with, with, and it's as I understand it. I'm not a pilot. Never been in the cockpit, but there's the it's a little ball and there's a blue side and a brown side. The blue side is the sky.
This is a long time ago.
They might have changed. Probably digital now. But if you're flying
this
a plane,
this one had a handle like the right one.
It had a compass on there too. Yeah.
So there's a lot of plane crashes are caused by the pilots. It's called spatial disorientation, where pilots get up there, especially when it's dark or cloudy and rainy. Yep.
Don't know and, up from down, down from up.
Right, but there's an instrument in the cockpit that is designed to basically help you through that because it's designed to always fly. I don't know how it's built, but it's basically to it's always going to be right. If you if it the blue sky's up, then you're level. If the if it's tilted, you're whatever it says you're doing is what you're actually doing. But so many pilots, when things get a little chaotic, their instincts take over. And when you're going through a crisis, it doesn't feel natural to sit here and look at this ball. It still seems natural to look out the window at the world. And in doing that, they take their eye off the ball literally, and they crash the plane.
And it's
because they weren't looking at it. Now, to me, that's that ball is God's word and His guidance, and we do that. The storms are life, and that's going to happen. When things get crazy, we take over. We need to fix it, knowing the instrument's there. But we just think that we think of the instrument in that situation as like a an extra bonus if we need it. But really, this is what that's your lifeline.
Yeah, that, trust your instrument panel,
and
lean not on your own understanding,
but
trust in His word and trust in that that what He's telling you, and that's going to always be the key.
And I think I've said this before, but where that joy I think comes from, I think I've given some of these examples, but here lately especially I've seen so many. I'm at this weird little crossroads sort of where I'm seeing this from past situations, and it's helping in current situations too, where God has taken really lousy situations in the past. And I don't know if I've said this on the show or not, but there are a couple in particular, not to name them specifically, but a couple in particular where there is something that I may regret or a situation where I hated it. And my natural instinct is to say I'd do anything to go back and change that, except that the good thing that came from it, I wouldn't trade for a million. So going back, it's like, well, okay, I know that what I did was wrong, okay? So I've asked that question before, like, when you do something wrong, does that mean, and then God does something good with it, does that make it part of God's will? Well, no, it wasn't God's will for me to make the mistake, but He took the mistake and He did something incredible with it, so incredible that I wouldn't change the mistake if I could now. So that gives you the peace of like, well, whatever, if I mess it up, He's going to do something great with it. If I get it right, He's going to do something great with it. Whatever happens, He's doing something great with it. So even when you're mad at yourself for making a mistake, or you're mad at circumstances, or you're mad at life, or whatever, the joy comes from knowing that whatever it is, He's doing something good with everything. And you can even find joy and peace in the moment. It's hard, but you can go ahead and fast forward to the part where you know you're going to be grateful for what He did with this situation, and just kind of tell yourself you don't have to wait to be happy for it. You can enjoy you can enjoy it right now, knowing He's going to do something good with it, even if you can't see what it is, at least from my experience.
Well, I think that's faith.
Romans 8:28. But you have to use Romans 8:28 with the right a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
You know, you don't walk across the street and it's going to work out for you. No, it's, I don't think so.
No.
And that's not going to work out for your good. Well, it might be. Yeah.
No, I think one of the things too you're talking about there is faith.
Yeah.
Faith is trusting that God's going to be who God says He's going to do, or do what He says He's going to do, and that sometimes and our faith grows through those trials, through those times, and oftentimes we can look back on the most difficult situations No, still might not be that it worked out real well, but at the same time, he brought me through that, or I can see how he did that, or we learn, maybe I ain't going to do that again. You know, that's one of the reasons that the Pharisees are who they are in the New Testament, in Jesus' time, is they learned their lesson from worshiping false idols and everything else going into exile, that, man, they were bound and determined, we're going to follow the law. We're not going back into exile. So they became the legalistic, got to do this. And so that's where, you know, that's where they came from, really. And so it's one of those things of God can take those hurts, and he uses those hurts in those tough times to grow us more so than just the good times. I really do believe, because as we've said before, without the test, there's no testimony, and without the trials, there is no growth. I mean, it hurts to grow, but by faith, I can remember, God, if you brought me through that, then next next thing you face might not be as big, but I know he's going to be there.
Well, I guess in our society, man, probably me too, as well. I'm just thinking in general. Everybody, we want to know what's going to happen. We want to know the end result. We want to know what's going to happen in the future. It's just, I think it's just our nature. We want to be in control, I guess. Is that a better word? Control.
Yeah.
I just want to, I want to get his approval first. Okay. and so, and a lot of times, you just got to trust God. Yeah. And I don't know if it's going to work out. I just know in my life sometimes, I know things are going to work out or not. And as I look back, fortunately, it did. But as I look back, if I could have known what would happen, I don't know if I would believed it then or not. Yeah. I only know if I had the capability, you know. And I do remember going to an interview one time in Little Rock.
Arkansas?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I was coming out of RDU, and I was sitting in the plane just on the runway, and the only thing I can see is just inside. I can't see what's going on out there. And then, as I get a little higher, I can see more. As I get a little higher, man, I can see these cars going this way. And don't run that red light, because this guy's going to come right here and slam into you. And that's just, I think God just wants us to trust him without knowing what's going to happen.
Yep.
I mean, we know the end result, but I wouldn't have had no capability of seeing that car coming by here. If I'm driving there and those buildings are right there, but if I'm up here, I can see it all. And as I get further and further, I can see, you know, cities, what's going on down there. And I think, you know, God, we just need to trust God, because God knows the beginning and the end. He's in the past, present, and future. And this is hard for me to understand. Past, present, and future all at one time.
Yeah.
So he's God of the past, he's God of the present, and he's God of the future. And I know we're in time for us. The past is the past. You can't do anything about it. But he already knows the past, just as he knows the future. So,
yeah, sure.
And we just sometimes just need to trust in him. He knows and he's not going to hurt us. He wants to help us.
Yeah.
You know, he has great plans for you. Plans are not to hurt you.
Yeah.
Plans to make you more holier and to live a better life. And sometimes we just don't get that. Did I make myself clear?
No, I think you're exactly right. I mean, when you talk about faith, it's trusting God that he is always good and he's always faithful.
Yeah.
And I can trust that no matter what he leads me through, I can trust that he knows what he's doing.
And he sees everything at once. And that's what my thing was about. And normally I'm sitting on that plane, or I'm just here. I can't see anything. What's going on? I don't even know what's going on. There might be somebody breaking in here and shoot us.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. But he already knows everything, because he sees everything. And I kind of got that as I got higher. Well, yeah, I can see a lot more than what I used to. Yeah, you know, what I'm used to. So, but now that I can't see what's going on, but just what's in my view, but God sees everything else. So that's why I need to trust him.
Well, and that's something that piece, it's because it can be almost talking about two different things that it applies to. It can definitely be in the situations that are just, that are hard, that you're going through a challenging time, you're going through tough things, and it's not necessarily anything that's you've caused or anything that you've, it can be your own mistakes. The 90% of the sins that have been your fault, but it can also be the 10% of your sins that were not your fault that can happen.
People get sick.
Yeah.
Spouses get sick.
Right.
Do that.
Right. But I think that this is probably going to go down as the worst analogy I've ever used on the show, but I'm going to go with it anyway, because I want to paint this as like a guardrail of even in the worst possible scenario you might be, not the worst scenario, but even at the most extreme harsh view of God you might have, I think this might be maybe the guardrail on that end. Did you guys ever watch the movie, if not, you'll know what I'm talking about anyway, they made a movie about Bear Bryant, the football coach at Alabama, called The Junction Boys, came on ESPN.
I know the name, but I don't know if I've seen the movie.
Yeah. It was an ESPN documentary thing they did on it, where it kind of documents what a mean coach he was. They hated him. They hated him and everything he did. And it was at the end of camp, about half the kids quit, and it was brutal. And it looks, it wouldn't fly today. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But it fast forward to the very end of the movie. They're doing like a 20-year reunion of that first, because at that time he was a pretty new coach. And he wasn't at Alabama and hadn't won all the national championships yet. But all those kids from that first team at Texas A&M were getting together for this reunion, and they were also thankful for what they had learned through that.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that Bear Bryant should be compared to God in any way, and I'm not trying to say that it's always got to be that view. But even at the worst viewpoint that you might have of God, sometimes, yeah, he's going to put some – there are going to be some situations where people go through some really, really hard times because that's just what he's got to do to grow.
That's right.
There's other times that he's – going to not have to do that. There's 100 different ways or 1,000,000 different ways that he can work these plans together and do what he needs to do. But sometimes it is going to be that hard growth that you're going to go through.
No, I think that's a perfect illustration, because think about it right now. I ran into coach for Fuquay High School yesterday. I was just out and about in one of the stores and ran into him. We just started talking, and he was just talking about the heat. And he said, man, I got those boys out there doing push-ups and jumping jacks and runs and sprints and running the offense. Nobody likes that August 1st through August 8th because it's 118 degrees. You're doing all them exercises. You're sweating. More than likely, you're probably not in the best of shape. You might be in decent shape, but all that running and you get done. But you do it so that come August 23rd, when they kick that ball off, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
And so, conditioning and discipline and everything else, it ain't easy. But if you're going to, and I always use this to talk to the boys, you're going to shine on Friday night. You got to do the work from the end of the football season to the beginning of the next, because it's in the weight room. It's in the, all the watching film. If you're going to shine on Friday night, you got to do the work before. And that's the same thing. If you're going to live for the Lord, there are going to be some things that might not be so easy.
And it's not, I think the trap that I fell into for a lot for a long time was thinking that was a cost of being a Christian, is that you had to suffer things that other people didn't have to suffer. And it shouldn't be seen that way, I don't think, because what he's doing, even those difficult things, it's not just to pay your dues. Mm-hmm. It's not just so you can earn your Christian card and do your...
So you can get your jersey.
That's right, yeah. No, it's to develop something in you, and you may not know what that is. And I know when I was playing football, those first, second, fifth days of practice, I hated my coaches.
Yeah, can't even walk the next day.
But there's a particular scene from Junction Boys, and this was really... I don't want to leave this out, because this was really an important part of this analogy to me. There's a scene towards the end of that movie. If I can find it on YouTube, I'll insert it in here somewhere. But there's a particular scene at the end of that movie where they're at the end of camp, and they finally got their survivors of who's going to be the team or whatever. So it's a little bit of a relief, I guess. But there's a particular line here where he kind of thanks them for their effort and all that kind of stuff. He said, but listen, we are never going to stop working. And I've heard that from God, it feels like, a little bit. Like, that loving side that I maybe was missing for a long time, I feel the love, but there's love in that work, too, that, hey, just because I'm saying, okay, good, like, in that case, he's saying, hey, I understand camp was hard,
yeah,
but we're here, and we're, now we're going to move on to the season, we're going to be better. But don't think that just because I'm being nice today that this is going to be it.
No, or don't, just don't get comfortable.
Right. Well, I mean, in Bear Bryant's case, he was straight up saying, don't think because I'm nice today that it's the rest of the season. We're never going to quit working. Right. But it's the same thing with God. Okay, yes, you've seen that I do things for good, and you've seen that things work out and all that kind of stuff, but don't think that that means we're done working.
And it's all,
and
all,
we're always,
all rainbows.
That's right. And it's unicorns. But as you hear that and you feel that, you, I swear, it's the strangest thing to say. You can start to embrace the challenges a little bit, but no, it, when there's a difference when I know I've done something to cause it. Now that's right. That's a little bit different. Still, he's going to do something good with it, and there's forgiveness and grace. But a lot of times, it's still just okay. I'm not real happy with what we're doing right this second, but it's just part of the workout plan. It's part of the part of what he's doing.
Trust the program.
Yeah. And that's where I think when I mentioned this week, backwards looking blessings, sometimes you don't realize them at the time, but when you look back, you look at it and say, wow, you know, I guess that worked out way better than if we hadn't done that.
Especially things that might not have been easy a long time ago. Yeah. And where this came from was, man, I was so tickled that Nicole was watching the live stream Sunday and commenting on some things and put some quotes, sending me quotes of, there you go again, saying, you know, she knows, I know what's coming. And
Was she on the live stream commenting and stuff?
No, she was sending it. She's going to do it on Facebook. Okay. But anyway, so I know she's watching, and sometimes I get blow-by-blow stuff as during the service that the kids let me know.
So they critique you. Nice.
They critique the service. Critique the music, whatever. They critique a lot of stuff. So, but it was good to know. All right, she's watching. And what we were talking about was, you know, all those years of dragging her to church, making her go, and hey, it's Sunday morning. You know what that means.
Yeah,
that saying didn't just come when I got to Fuquay. We used to say it at the house. It's Sunday morning. You know what that means. We're going to church.
Yeah.
And for my family, it was, we knew. All right, it's Sunday. Where else are we going to go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really. Unless we are out of town or something like that, I know exactly where we're going to be going.
Yeah, now you go anywhere.
Yeah, well, but when we were a young family, when we were a young family, it was, okay, we know it's Saturday. Who knows where we're going to be, but come Sunday, for the most part, it's Sunday. You know what that means.
It's sad. I hate it, but it's sad how, I know celebrating Sunday one way or the other is not going to get you to heaven, but it's just sad to see that people, how busy it is in the mornings when I come to church.
Or that they have made it into what, I mean, so many people are going, so many people have ball games and everything else that...
I remember being up north for a long time at work. And what's going on here was already going on there. You know, malls were just packed out on like a Sunday morning. What in the world? Everything's open. And so now that we've had people keep moving down here from, I'm assuming this happens in the north.
Right.
It's just changed the dynamics and changed the culture.
No, I remember stores used not to be open. I can tell you that on Sunday morning.
And then. I think the grocery stores started opening a little while. I don't know, remember how long. Then CVS, or then they would open from 1 to 5, maybe 1 to 12, 6. And all of a sudden, Belk's finally opened in the mall, you know, 7 days a week. And now everything was opening up after 12, and now everything's open up at 8 o'clock.
Or 24/7.
Yeah.
Just another business day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, there's the legalist, there's the non-legalistic side of look at that, too, and saying, okay, well, Sunday, you know, is it the worst thing in the world that grocery stores are open on Sunday afternoons now? Not necessarily. But here's the thing, but here's what I want to say to that. Of all of the commandments in the Bible, the Sabbath is maybe the one that we really, really don't appreciate the most. He basically said you have to take a day off.
Yeah.
And no, it's not just to goof off, it's to worship. But that's one of these that there couldn't have been maybe a more loving commandment that he gave than to say, yeah, we give you 1 day a week. 1 out of 7, you get to rest.
The Sabbath is for man.
Right. It's so when I find myself like wanting to do something, and I'm not I've done work on Sundays before, and even now, I'll, if I need to get something done, I'll do it.
Yeah. But at the same, in the ditch, we got to gotta fix it.
But at the same time, if I'm sitting around at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon, and I'm just kind of enjoying and relaxing a little bit,
nothing wrong with that.
Rather than feeling maybe guilty that I'm not getting anything done, I've remembered that, hey, that was the point of this is to enjoy.
It's a
and
good day to worship, good day to rest, good day to get just, caught up on reading, whatever
it's
you
just
want
a good day to do something you don't normally do. I know I had to work would have to work 7 days a week during tax season. I quit doing that after my first season, but the eighth day was like, oh man, I just didn't have it.
Yeah.
No.
For that whole week, I just didn't have it. So I figured out quickly that I can work as hard as I want to on, and from Monday to Saturday, and it don't really have to be on Sunday. I could use Tuesday to Sunday.
Just take a day. Mm-hmm.
I could work hard. And actually, it was easier for me to work from Monday to Saturday, take off Sunday, come back Monday. I wasn't even out of kilter. I mean, I my schedule didn't change. It was harder for me to work 5 days a week because Saturday I was was nice, but then I'm thinking about, oh man, Sunday I've got to get a wearing. You know,
the Sunday scares.
Monday morning blues. But my point really is that if I worked 8 days, I wasn't worth anything. That's right. 7 days, I wasn't worth anything that whole week.
And when God tells us to rest, it's not, you know, how funny that our Creator knew that we needed to rest about one every 7 days. Well, go figure.
I don't think it, for me, I don't interpret it as rest as much as doing something different, which is restful to me. I can mow grass on Sunday.
I don't think it is. I think it's more of
I can't mow grass 7 days a week or, you know, work 7 days a week. If that was my full-time job, I need to do accounting one day, you know, or something.
I'm the same way, man. If I don't get at least a break on Sunday afternoon after preaching, I can tell you the rest of the week I am dragging. Yeah, man. Sunday afternoon is one I gotta.
I thought you would do something different, like on Friday or whatever day you have off. Saturday.
That's cutting grass. Saturday, getting other stuff done.
Well, Friday is. Yeah. You're not at church. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You're not at your full time job.
Right.
Which I've noticed Sundays, I mean, because I've stuck around for just a couple minutes here. You don't stick around here very long. I mean, there was one day I had to go get the kids from kids' church.
It depends on what all's going on.
Yeah.
If it's one, this summer has been the summer of moving.
Yeah.
So we got to get down to Florida. We got to get to Tennessee. And I'm like, good gracious, let's get on the road.
Yeah. I never knew what happened after church on Sundays. I leave as soon as it's over. But when I had to go get the kids from children's church, and then we're walking back out, and I saw you for a minute. And next thing I know, we're walking out together. And I was like, you don't stay that long.
No. If I got meetings or something, I'll stay.
Yeah.
He's like a flash.
Yeah.
Where'd
we go?
Yeah. Once that camera's off, he's out.
As soon as the camera goes off.
I don't need to stick around. Yeah.
He's not on film. He's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just disappears.
Yeah, somebody might want some.
Yeah, well, that's true. Or tell you how
what they thought of the sermon.
What you got to do tomorrow?
Do people complain about the sermon very often? I've heard you bring that up before.
No, I don't know that I ever get anybody. People joke about all the length. personally, and again, I may be the most self-unaware person. I don't think they're that long, and if they get over a certain amount of time, I try to make them two. But people joke about the length.
Well, no, man.
Sometimes, and I don't know that I'm that long-winded. Sometimes I do get a little.
I would tell you this. It's hard for me to, when I take the offering, and this is my month, taking the offering, get down here, count it, get done before he's through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I try to keep it right at 30 minutes.
Like, man, we hear them coming down. We're not even through.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're fast. We're slow.
To me, it should be about an hour. That's me personally.
No, I only think you preach about a half an hour.
I don't know. If you
He's saying the service is an hour.
Oh, the whole service. Yeah.
I'm 30 to 35 minutes. If you go longer than that, the body just ain't made to take it anymore, man. We're not made to. I want your focus and your attention. You go over 35, 40 minutes, most of the time, I know I'm not that talented enough to keep your attention that long. Most people aren't.
I don't know if we're that talented to listen to you.
Yeah, that's right. So it's a little bit of both, but you're right. So I don't want to, I mean.
There's no sense in going over 30.
And it's one of, you know, I'll hang around and talk to anybody who wants to hang around and talk. Yeah. But if I see that they're not, and a lot of times it has to do with my family's like, let's go eat.
Yeah.
Do you ever see them waving at you? Or do you ever make
it? No. But when it's time to go, my family's like, we're going to Jersey Mike. We're going to this. We're going to that. And it's like,
do you make plans before?
I got some folks I need to talk to.
Before or after?
Semi. Most of the time it's day off. And right, usually it's
I know if,
5 minutes afterwards.
She's never
really done it that much.
Yeah.
But I think it's not maybe just, it can be physical rest. I think it could be mental rest, emotional rest. I mean, it could be, you know, for me, it might be going out and playing 18 holes of golf and just enjoying being outside for a little bit. I don't know.
And it could be worship. But I don't think a lot of Christians worship all day long Sunday.
No.
No. I mean, it's a day of worship.
A good day. I mean, it's one that every time I hear somebody say, I just ain't got time to, to focus on my walk. I always want to say, yeah, you do. You got a whole day he's giving you.
Ben's got to run. We got to run. Appreciate you guys.
Hey, man. Thank you, guys.
I'll see y'all.
All right.
I do think we're on a 2-week break, so we'll be back in 2 weeks.
So that's why we have a lot of different denominations. People don't believe the same way. Yeah. I probably need to start my own denomination.
That's right.
Oh, Lord.
All right. Well, I wouldn't say anything. I'm just agreeing with y'all. Or maybe go to church and hear me in 35-minute sermon.
36.4.
Keeps it average.
Yeah. Over average.